I have a theory. I want to hit you with it. But first, we have to talk about how the ivermectin thing went in COVID, which was, I don't know, about as bad as it could go. So we have to try and remember what COVID was like early on, how little we knew, and how hard we were trying to get new information. And COVID became very quickly a very highly studied thing. And there were lots of studies coming out. And one of the studies showed that ivermectin in vitro, like in a dish, in like vials, could kill COVID. And so that was exciting. And that meant that scientists were going to do some research on whether or not that would actually work inside of a mouse or inside of a person. This would be huge. It would be so helpful because ivermectin is easy to make. It's super cheap. It's available everywhere. It is a great drug that is super useful in its main context, which is as an antiparasitic. So getting rid of parasitic infections inside of people. But if it could help with COVID, that would be a huge win. And early studies showed that there might be some positive effect in people taking ivermectin and decreasing the severity of a COVID infection. Now, things were moving very fast, and there were lots of studies, and some showed effects and some didn't, but this is exciting, and so there were more studies that people wanted to do. And then at some point, and I'm not gonna like dig deep enough to put my finger on how this happened, but at some point people were like, okay, ivermectin's good for COVID, and they're not letting us have it for various reasons. You should just go and get it because it's available. In some places, it's available over the counter. Not in America, but in the US, it's available as a veterinary medicine over the counter. And you have to remember that public health people, like, they're the people who know why a medicine has to say only take this orally. Like, they know why that's on there because they've seen what happens. People will do wild things with medicine if you don't give them the correct context. They will take too much, they will take it the wrong way, they will grind it up and snort it. They want to be careful, and I understand them wanting to be careful. And when humans start taking medicine designed for livestock, that is a situation where there's a good chance that they're going to take too much, or they're going to take it wrong, and they're going to hurt themselves. In general, the big thing that in medicine people want is to not have people take medicines when we don't know if they work, because all medicines have some side effects. Now, ivermectin does not have significant side effects at the doses that people would normally take, but you can take enough that it will hurt you. So I'm not surprised that the public health people freaked out a little bit, and then I'm further not surprised that people that were kind of aligned with the public health establishment, myself included, some of those people, not myself included, would then go online and then mock people for taking horse dewormer. And like, yes, they were taking horse dewormer, but I do not like this because ivermectin is a legitimate medicine that lots of people need to take many times in their lives because parasitic infections are a real thing. So they were taking horse dewormer, but the active ingredient, ivermectin, is a medicine for people and horses and all kinds of animals. It kills parasites. Now, by late 2021 and early 2022, we had had enough data come in from enough big studies to see that it did not seem like ivermectin helped people at all with COVID. If the effect was there, and we're still not entirely settled on whether it's there, but if the effect is there, then it is small. And because we now have better tools, like certain monoclonal antibodies for severe cases, Paxlovid for mild cases, dexamethasone, which is a steroid and anti-inflammatory, which really helped people with severe COVID. Dexamethasone turned out 1/3 reduction in death for people on ventilators. Huge, great news. Dexamethasone, existing, very inexpensive drug. I was on it during chemo because it helps with nausea. By the time we had like these big randomized controlled trials with the Together trial and the Active 6 trial, we like had that, and it was pretty clear that ivermectin didn't have, if there is an effect, it's very small, very hard to tease out. We have better tools. We stopped exploring ivermectin as a potential tool for COVID. But by that point, everybody was on sides. So there was people yelling at each other about they're dumb for using ivermectin. You're an idiot taking horse dewormer. And there's people over here shouting, oh, you're trying to, like, you're letting the medical establishment control you. But I want to be clear, by the time these randomized control studies were published, the fighting had already like established the sides. And it was entirely possible that we could have discovered that ivermectin actually was a useful treatment for COVID, which is why you wouldn't find me on Twitter yelling about people taking horse dewormer. Obviously, people should not self-medicate with stuff that they buy at their local farm supply store. But at the same time, I'm not gonna like put a bunch of political identity into a medicine that might, probably wouldn't, but might have a positive impact for people who have COVID. We don't know that yet. We didn't know it. Now we know it. It shook out the way I expected it to shake out, but I wouldn't have been surprised if it had shaken out the other way. It makes more sense to me that dexamethasone would be a good treatment for COVID because inflammatory cytokine storms are a really big part of the mechanism of how it hurts people. But you don't know. You don't know. Initial in vitro studies were very promising. In vivo studies were a little bit promising. Randomized controlled trials show no effect. That's really not unusual at all in drug development. And now I'm going to show you a clip of Mel Gibson on the Joe Rogan Experience. I'm sorry I'm doing it, but it's important for the topic at hand, which is a hypothesis I have that I want to share with everybody.
I don't believe that there is anything that can afflict mankind that hasn't got a natural cure for it.
He doesn't believe that there's anything that can afflict mankind that doesn't have a natural cure for it. I mean, do you think that people would live infinitely if only we could discover all of the correct natural cures? No. Aging is the main thing that afflicts mankind at this point, and there isn't a natural cure for aging. Otherwise, I imagine the baboons would have found it. Illness seems unfair. Illness seems horrible, and, it shouldn't happen. It's been one of the biggest questions of all time. Why does suffering exist if we are in a world that has a just God? You know, different people have different solutions for that problem. But even without God, it doesn't feel fair. It doesn't feel fair that ourselves are so vulnerable. Less vulnerable now than they used to be, but so vulnerable to just being lost to these tiny things, to these infections, to the weaknesses of our blood vessels, to the frailness of our bodies. It doesn't feel that the self should be vulnerable to that. But of course it is. Anyway, here's the thing I wanted to show you.
I'll tell you a good story.
Okay.
I have three friends. All three of them had stage 4 cancer. All three of them don't have cancer right now at all. And they had some serious stuff going on.
So just to pop in right there, I hear a lot of stories like this because of my position as a science communicator and as a person who has been through cancer treatment and is a cancer survivor. I try my best to look deeply into these stories. We're not going to get deep into these stories here with Mel Gibson. But every time I can get details, I find that in these cases, the patients in question did the standard of care. So they did what their doctor told them to do. They got surgery and or chemo and or immunotherapy and or radiation and or other cancer treatments. And then in addition, they got these other treatments, whether that was fasting or it was diet changes or it was one of these chemicals. And then always in the sort of communication that is put out, all of the traditional treatments are sort of ignored or downplayed or not mentioned at all. And the only treatment that is mentioned is the one that they chose, they elected to do on their own. And then they end up in a situation where they don't have cancer anymore. You can't say that someone who had stage 4 cancer doesn't have cancer anymore unless this was a long time ago. Very likely this person is in remission. Mel's friends, and I'm very happy that they are in remission, of course, as modern medicine is amazing. But of course, in oncology, people wouldn't say they don't have cancer anymore. They'd say that they were in remission. Regardless, we're going to keep going because the point is coming.
And they had some serious stuff going on.
And what did they take?
Jesus. They took some...
I mean, the body language here.
They took some... What you've heard they've taken.
Ivermectin.
Fenbendazole.
Yeah. I'm hearing that a lot.
So we've got ivermectin, fenbendazole, and we're going to get there. I'm sorry. I don't know why I structured this video this way. For those of you who have stuck around, thank you.
There's drank hydrochloride something.
Hydrochloroquine. And we're going to get one more.
On that there's now where people have proven that
people are drinking methylene blue and stuff.
Methylene blue. All right. So we've got four. Count them. Four miracle cures for cancer. Now, which one of them did the thing? Was it the ivermectin, the fenbendazole, the methylene blue, or the hydroxychloroquine? I don't know. But there is something that all of these medicines have in common, and it is nothing to do with how they are active in the body. Ivermectin will paralyze the muscle cells of invertebrates, whereas fenbendazole breaks up their microtubules, which makes it so their cells fall apart. So those are very different effects. But hydroxychloroquine and methylene blue do totally different things mechanistically. So which of these was the thing that actually helped these patients? I'm going to wager that it was probably the immunotherapy and chemotherapy and surgery that they were given by their cancer doctor. And I promise you, these people did not withhold themselves from normal cancer treatment. That is always how it's pitched. And it's never what people actually do because they know that they are likely to die. And then they do additional stuff because they want to give themselves every chance that they can have. Regardless, these medicines don't have anything to do with each other mechanistically. They don't all do similar things. And I'm not saying they're not biologically active. I'm not saying there aren't times when these can be medicines and can be helpful to people. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do research on these chemicals to see how they impact human bodies and other bodies and when they can be useful. But I do know that they all have things in common that has led to them becoming these miracle drugs. They all fall into very clear categories here, and I'm going to list them for you. And I'm fascinated that all of these medicines have these same characteristics. Number one, they're pretty safe and don't have a lot of side effects. Now, one thing you can say about chemotherapy is that it helps kill cancer cells, but you can't say that it doesn't have a lot of side effects. Like if you took a medicine and it cured your COVID, but it gave you like tremendous diarrhea, then I just don't think that medicine would ever be recognized as a miracle cure. It would have to be the normal scientific process that figured out that that thing was the miracle cure, because normal people would take it and be like, I got explosive diarrhea and I'm not going to recommend that to my friend. So the medicine has to basically do nothing. That's the first box it has to check. I'm busting in here real quick because I have to add some context here. When I say that these things have like low side effects when people typically take them, and I talk about this more later in the video, but I want to be specific here. That is tends to be the case at the doses that people are suggesting each other take. But that doesn't mean that there's zero chance of something serious happening, and it doesn't mean that there isn't a fairly high chance of something like dizziness or nausea happening. Methylene blue is a drug that is sometimes prescribed by doctors, which is, again, why I find it so puzzling that it can be sold as a supplement, but I don't understand how any of this works. And if your doctor prescribes it to you, they're going to ask you if you're taking an SSRI. Because if you take an SSRI with methylene blue, there's like a toxicity risk that is specific to people taking SSRIs. But if Mel Gibson suggests on a podcast that methylene blue is a good supplement and you don't know about that and you're on an SSRI, you could seriously hurt yourself. Side effects can be complicated and they can be surprising and they can be specific to specific individuals who are on specific medications or who have specific genetics. That's why biologically active compounds like this have to be prescribed by a doctor who understands that's the side effect profile, and then given to you by a pharmacist who's going to be like, oh, just so you know, are you on this medication? Because this drug has an interaction with it. Hydroxychloroquine specifically has a known negative interaction with a breast cancer medicine. So like, you want to know that. So it makes sense that public health people freak out about this stuff, which leads me to the number two category, which we can now continue on with now that I've given you a better idea that these aren't just like zero side effect drugs. But I do think that these have to be drugs that for most people, if taken at low doses, do not result in any noticeable or significant severe side effect. And that is true for all of these drugs, unless you take them at high doses, in which case the side effect profiles can go way up and be quite dangerous. Second thing, it has to be a little bit dangerous. So if you take way too much, or in very certain circumstances or certain people that have certain situations, it has to be dangerous enough that public health people say, don't take this medicine. That sets up a dichotomy between the people who have taken it and know they didn't, at the very least, experience any negative side effects, and a bunch of public health people yelling at them, telling them that the thing they're doing is dangerous. This is like when I was a kid and people would tell me that smoking weed is really bad for you and terrible and gotta kill you and gotta make you into a like a cokehead. And I'm like, that none of that stuff happened to any of the people I know who've ever smoked pot. I mean, actually, some of the stuff did happen to people I knew who smoked pot, but not immediately. It took a little while. And look, I don't think that the coke was directly related to the pot, if we're being honest. And we're not talking about me. I feel like, to emphasize, I've never done cocaine. Never even had a chance to do cocaine. So that's box number two. Box number three, it has to be available. It has to be the kind of thing that you can go and get. With ivermectin and fenbendazole, you can go and get some at your local supply store. Like, it's available over the counter as a veterinary medicine that you don't have to get a prescription for. Methylene blue, you can't stop people from selling because it's an industrial product. It's a fabric dye. They use it to like dye aquarium water. You can buy industrial methylene blue no matter what. It's just a thing that you can buy. And somehow, and I don't understand this, that has allowed it to be sold as a supplement, like very specifically with supplement words on it. Though it is always said that it's not intended to treat any disease. Now, hydroxychloroquine, as far as I know, you still have to get a prescription for it, but because there's been so much buzz, it is suddenly easy to get a prescription for it. You just have to know like the right doctor to talk to, which is wild, and I don't love. So that's the third box you got to check, that it has to be available, it has to be around, it has to be something that lots of people can get and experiment with so that they can talk about their experiences with the drug. And there's also a fourth, but let's go through our three again, just so that I keep them clear in my mind. Number one, they have to have minimal side effects. It has to be fairly hard to hurt yourself with them. Otherwise, when people are talking behind closed doors about this stuff, they'll talk about their negative experience. Number two, it has to be somewhat dangerous at certain doses or for certain people, or take it in certain ways. And that means that there's going to be like a public health freakout. The freakout is going to feel way out of proportion to the experiences of the people who have taken it. Number three, it has to be available widely. It has to be fairly easy to get for tons of people to have it so that they can have these conversations and it can bubble around a little bit. And number four, it has to be cheap. It has to be the kind of thing that people could just go and get. And it's like 20 or 30 or 50 bucks. The cheaper it is, the more likely it will be seen as a panacea. All of this adds up to lots of people trying it out, a very large public backlash against it, which then reinforces that somebody's trying to hide something from you. That is the mechanism at play. And that is the mechanism that we see at play in Mel Gibson when he's experiencing this giddy joy of knowing this thing that is being hidden from people, and that he feels, because it is true, is no doubt going to escape and is going to be known by many people and is going to save many lives. That giddiness, that feeling of knowing something that no one else knows, something powerful, something that can't be hidden anymore by these evil, powerful people. And that's why all of these drugs that Mel Gibson mentioned have nothing in common chemically, nothing in common physiologically or how they act in the body, but all four of these things in common, which don't seem like they should matter, because none of them have anything to do with whether they actually cure or don't cure a disease. And if we can look at medical misinformation through this light, like this model, should be helpful when it comes to dealing with medical misinformation. Because one of the pieces in this is the reaction to the reaction. So there's what is perceived as a big overreaction from certain parts of society, and that seems like they're trying to hide something. I don't know exactly what to do about that, but I do know that like shouting mean things to people on Twitter definitely doesn't help. That drives people further in. They say, you think I'm taking horse dewormer, but everyone I know is doing this and no one is being harmed. And that can absolutely be true, because the medical establishment isn't thinking about whether 30 people can do something with no harm. They're thinking about whether 3,000 or 30,000 people can do something with no harm. And when you scale up the orders of magnitude, they're freaking out because they know that there are going to be people hurt by this, but you probably are never going to know one of them. And that is especially heightened when there's an active pandemic, because maybe it would be fine for these people to take this medicine, just like people who have cancer sometimes take methylene blue, but they also take their chemotherapy. But if this is being taken instead of getting a COVID vaccine, instead of going to the hospital, instead of taking Paxlovid, instead of getting the help you need, public health people know that this will kill people. And their job is to have the fewest people possible die. They really don't like it when people die, so they freak out about this stuff. And so that's maybe like a fifth category here. Does it all happen at a moment of heightened awareness and heightened risk? And while that seems to be, to me, less the case for fenbendazole and for methylene blue, it's definitely the case for hydroxychloroquine and for ivermectin. And I think it's safe to say, this is how I feel anyway, that if you've heard of two of these, those are the two you've heard of. And the big thing here is this all makes sense to me. Mechanistically, this makes sense. It doesn't seem like a bunch of rational humans being super smart and logical, of course, but it makes sense. It seems like the kind of problem that would come up in a human culture. And that is a little bit relieving to me. It relieves some of the stress of the difficulty of this. But also, hopefully, thinking about it this way allows for more thoughtful ways of engaging with medical misinformation, which is something that I have to do a lot, but also feel I should do a lot, something that matters to me and that I care about. So that's my 5-point checklist model of snake oil, everybody. I talked for a really long time. Let's play connections. Cran, cup, cranberry, cran apple, cran. Cran, Brian Cranston. Rasp, cranberry, raspberry. That can't be it. That's that. That is a red flag, a red herring, but also a red flag. Rave, straw, goat, hero, blue, plane, lid, jack, saw. got raspberry, cranberry, strawberry, blueberry. Actually could be it. But they were too close together. I don't buy it. Plain, lid, jack, saw, chisel, flaming lips, napkin, Swiss, goat, blue. Those are all cheeses. Cup, lid, napkin. This is what you get when you get a coffee. Is it? And a straw, a cup lid, a straw, and a napkin. You know, things that come along with a drink. Is that it? Let's try to do cheeses. Goat, jack, Swiss, and blue. I mean, that's about as easy as the berries. Cranberry, raspberry, strawberry, blueberry. But straw was in cup, straw, lid, napkin. And then rasp is in rasp, saw, chisel, but I don't have a third one there. Cran, rave, plain, lid, napkin, chisel, flaming. I feel okay about this, and I feel okay about cup, straw, lid, napkin. I don't feel great about the other two. Okay. Hero. Saw. Rasp. Saw. Chisel. That feels plain. Oh, those are all tools. Those are all woodworking tools. And I know that I don't actually know what a rasp is, but it's filling up the woodworking tool spot in my brain. I learned that at some point, but then all the information around it somehow was lost, but it's still hanging out in that spot. Rasp, saw, chisel, plane. And that leaves us with crayon, rave, hero, and flaming? Well, I don't know what this is. It's probably a word one. Don't know. Let's just go. Let's see what it is. Did I do it? I did. It's birds minus the last letter. Fine. You know? Fine. As long as I'm getting it right, I don't care how ridiculous you are. Now, what? It's probably the plane, saw, chisel, and rasp. Woodworking tools? Straw, lid, napkin, and cup. Is it just what comes with a coffee? Beverage self-service items, great. And cheeses! And that berry was a red herring. All right. Heck yes. Perfect. That was pretty easy. I'd say that was a 1 out of 5. 2 out of 5, okay. Well, that was fine. I feel good about it. All right. Drugs!